It's time for What's Up with Minister Paul Goldsmith.
Yes, it is. Morena, Minister.
Morena.
Morena.
How are you this morning?
Very well. The sun is shining here down in Wellington. Beautiful day.
Nice.
Lot going on.
Yep, lots going on. It was nice to have you up in Auckland for the Tape Music Prize. Did you have a nice time?
I did. It was. It's always great to get along to those. Hear some different music and gives you something to add to the playlist. And it was good to celebrate New Zealand musicians doing well.
Hard
out. And some historic stuff as well.
Yeah, for sure. It's a special time, and it's a New Zealand Music Month, so we're deep in our appreciation for music at the moment. But I do want to talk a little bit about some of the big news that came out yesterday. Minister Nicola Willis announcing some serious job cuts in the public sector. We're potentially looking at losing 8,700 jobs by mid-2029. It's a huge amount of cuts. I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there who are feeling quite concerned about the level of people who are going to be doing it potentially quite hard after losing their jobs.
Yes. It is a difficult time. I'm the Minister for the Public Service, and so there's a different... closely involved in all of that. And I think the thing that people need to appreciate first is that over the last, the 6 years of the Labor government, they increased the number of public servants by about 19,000. So we had from 47 to 65. So there was a historic hiring spree over that 6 years, which is very easy to do, very easy to hire lots of people. And so unfortunately, but it wasn't sustainable. That's why one of the reasons why we're running huge deficits and why we've got debt, and the younger generation are sort of having to look at paying back years and years of debt that this one has racked up. And so that's why we're trying to unwind some of that, but very much in the context of rethinking about the whole sort of structure of the public service, and also the greater use of technology to be more effective in the work that we do.
And it's been a goal for a little while. The government in 2023 saying that you wanted to move resources out of bureaucracy and more into the front lines. Do you feel as though you've done that, though? Because, we've still got firefighters striking.
Yes. Unfortunately, that's... there's always a gap between what some people want and what the country can afford to pay, and so that does lead to sometimes to industrial action. But we've made some progress over the last 2.5 years, significant progress, because as well as ramping up the number of public servants, the previous administration spent hugely on consultants as well, and so over the last 2 years we've reduced the spending by consultants by nearly $1 billion. So that's money that can be better spent elsewhere on the front line, extra police or extra help in the classroom.
But beyond the savings, what sort of support is actually there to help those people on the front lines, and what resources are being poured in there? If that was the goal in 2023, to take less resources out of bureaucracy and more into the front lines?
We've hired extra police people. We've put extra people into corrections, a part of our efforts to restore law and order. We've put some extra, a large number of extra teacher aides, for example, into the system. We've made a significant improvement in the overall number of nurses in our hospital. So there's good progress being made in all of those areas. But what we did need to do was take account of the fact that there had been a hiring spree in the general public service, and we've got the hard task of trying to unwind some of that. Now, obviously we're conscious of the uncertainty that creates for people in that sector, and particularly a lot of them in Wellington. But it is worth bearing in mind that a country, when it's growing, when the New Zealand economy is growing, it's creating many, many jobs on a regular basis. When we were last in government in 2017, in 1 year, more than 100,000 net new jobs were created by the economy. Yes, fewer people will be in the public service, but if we can get some growth back into the economy, there'll be many, many opportunities for them to pick up new jobs and do well.
But, putting 8,700 people out of work when we're dealing with a fuel crisis, when people are struggling to put food on the table, that's hardly looking after the squeezed middle as National has promised, is it?
Well, it is, because the most important thing to help the 5 million New Zealanders who are trying to get through a globally difficult time, part of the solution to that is having a responsible government that is sustainable in what it spends, because ultimately the money has to come out of the pockets of the 5 million New Zealanders through taxes, and we're if you're sitting watching what's happening in Australia, if you've got a left wing government that just keeps on spending, inevitably they just come after more tax, and so New Zealanders who work hard every week and see a big chunk of their paycheck going off to Wellington want to know that we're doing a good job and making sure that we spend it wisely.
Right,
and don't take any more if we can get away with it.
In terms of getting New Zealand back on track, as is the slogan, I mean, with all these job cuts, how are we going to ensure that the public sector still runs smoothly for New Zealanders?
Well, back in 2017, the public sector ran very well with 47,000 staff, and then when Labor put an extra 19,000 on, huge, massive, historic increase, actually the outcomes were not much better, in fact much worse in many respects. If I look at my justice space, the big long waits for court cases, if you look in education, half the kids weren't going to school, and there are a whole series of areas where the outcomes weren't improving. So it's not simply a matter of just hiring more people leading to better outcomes. It's actually being clear about what you're trying to achieve. Now, I'm not criticising public servants. I think there are many great people doing brilliant jobs, working very hard and doing their very best. But the guidance from the top and from the government and the clarity around what we're trying to achieve is very important.
Regardless of the actions of the previous government, though, if we're going to cut a bunch of jobs now, you haven't really answered the question as to how we're going to ensure that the public sector can still run.
Because we've got every confidence that if we bring it back to the historic average, which is about 1% of the general population, which would be about 55,000, that's more than sufficient to get the job done. But we'll be putting, at the moment we've got quite a large number of government departments. There's a lot of duplication and small little agencies, each with their own setups. So there may be some redesign of the system. Other countries such as Australia and the UK have far fewer bigger, more concentrated government departments. So that's part of the element. The other part of the element, of course, is that, like everybody else in the world, the public sector is grappling with how we can make better use of new technology, which is important. If you look in the private sector, if you ask a CEO of a communications company or one of the telecoms companies, that the thing that they worry about most is that their competitors will be faster in their use of the new technology and leave them behind in the dust. That competitive tension doesn't necessarily exist in the public sector, but part of my job as Minister of Public Sector and Digitising Government is to really ensure that we're looking for every opportunity to make use of new technology to get better outcomes for people, such as faster court hearings, such as not having to, a New Zealander not having to fill in their details every time over and over again with different government departments and muck around and have difficulty getting through to call centres. All those sorts of things can be improved substantially by technology.
Just quickly before we move on to the BSA, I do want to talk about the savings here, because the forecast is that cutting all these jobs could save us $2.4 billion. But, you know, in March last year, the government came under fire for cutting a bunch of public sectors while giving, you know, in terms of the interest deductibility savings, giving a tax cut to landlords. That's going to cost $2.9 billion. That's $800 million more than National originally campaigned on. Are we making up for overspending on, you know, prioritising the benefit of wealthy New Zealanders by making cuts to the public sector?
Well, I don't like to be unkind, but I think you're grossly misrepresenting the beneficiaries of the landlord changes, because that all flows through to rents.
What evidence do we have that actually is reducing rents since we started those cuts?
Well, it has. It's made a big, huge difference after a long period where rents were going up very, very substantially, like they did under the Labor government. They have now stopped going up, and in many areas have fallen. And that's partly because if you pile on additional costs to landlords, then eventually it flows through to the renters. And so one of the most important things that we've done to address the cost of living pressures is change some of those settings so to take pressure off rents. And it's worked, and it's worked substantially. And you know, I think you would be coming at me very hard if rents had gone up another $150 a week on average like they did the previous 6 years.
There has been experts say, though, that money spent there could have been redirected to help people who are needing it in more direct ways, though.
Well, yes, but bear in mind that, you know, as on behalf of all New Zealanders, we spend about $5 billion a year on housing assistance. You know, it's colossal what we spend already through, you know, either state houses or housing supplements. So, and that is unsustainable. So, you know, the primary focus of all our housing policy is to reduce the cost of building new houses and creating more supply so that there's less pressure on the housing, and then trying to, you know, reduce some of the very substantial costs that have been added on to landlords, because it's not compulsory for people to rent out their houses. You know, if you make it too expensive, too difficult to get rid of unruly tenants and things like that, then people just don't do it. Then there's a shortage of supply, and then everybody's competing with everybody else to get each flat that comes up, and the price goes up. And that's what we saw over a period of time, and that really made life difficult, particularly for students and, you know, people starting off in their career. So that's been a big focus of our government.
I do want to touch briefly on the disestablishment of the Broadcasting Standards Authority, the BSA. This has been, as you can imagine, a hot topic amongst BFM and our listeners. There's no current plan to have any sort of infrastructure to replace the BSA, and media self-regulation is sort of the move forward. Are we expecting bedlam of hate speech?
Well, no, I don't think so. We've announced our intention to disestablish the BSA. It hasn't been disestablished overnight. We have to change the legislation, and so that'll take quite some time. While we're working our way through that, we're contemplating what replaces it. And in the starting proposition is an expansion of the role of the Media Council. Currently, the Media Council it's a self-regulation model that handles all the print journalism, and it does it perfectly well. All that happened with the Broadcasting Standards Authority was that it was, you know, quite heavily regulating one very small slice of the news media landscape and how people get their information, which no longer really made sense. And, you know, there were vast other areas that weren't regulated, and one small little slice was. And so technology has overtaken that, and that's why we've moved to disestablish that over time. Yes, we'll work on self-regulation. And ultimately, the most important discipline on stations such as yourself is that if people don't like it, they'll switch off and go somewhere else. That's as long as they've got plenty of choice, then that's a good thing.
I want to talk about the Media Council. I think that lots of people would agree that the BSA Act of 1989 was pretty outdated and definitely needed a refresh. If we talk about the Media Council, there's a membership fee which stations like 95BFM, which are notoriously running on the smell of an oily rag, simply cannot afford. But, you know, we're still interested in being able to hold ourselves accountable in terms of journalistic integrity. Surely we're deserving of some sort of infrastructure that can support people to voice their concerns in a democratic way.
I'm very happy to look into that particular case. The starting proposition for, you know, any news entity is that they should have a complaint system themselves. If people, you know, aren't happy with something that they're not happy with my interview, they can ring you up and complain about it. And so the question is, what happens next if people aren't happy with that answer? And so the Media Council would be the logical next step, but that's what we're working our way through, and you know, how that's funded is, you know, it's generally an industry funded thing, but how that's divided up amongst the players is something that needs to be worked through. So you're happy to do that.
And in terms of holding, you know, online podcasts, social media sort of platforms accountable in what they publish, you said before people can just tune out if they like. But if we're going to, you know, talk about the issue of circles of people going down quite dark routes online, surely some sort of refreshed form of the BSA could have helped to reduce that?
Well, yes, but then yeah, you do get into, you know, quite difficult areas around... regulation of speech, and, you know, where does it end? I mean, it's, you know, it is much more diffuse. You've got, you know, lots of people, you know, on YouTube or where, TikTok or whatever, putting out messages and, you know, commenting on issues of the day and having their point of view. It's just not physically possible to try and regulate all of that. And I don't think desirable. A noisy democracy, rough and rowdy, noisy democracy is where we live. If the best response to speech that you don't like is more speech, making your argument against the other argument. And if people are being obnoxious, then the best result, or the best response, is just to switch off and go somewhere else.
I guess our concern is for vulnerable groups, like the youths and things like that, that are being exposed to ideas that could particularly change the way that they think.
I mean, that's part of the broader discussion around social media and under 16s, there's sort of ages where we're looking to, you know, be more more cautious. It's extraordinarily difficult to design anything to achieve that, you know, given the dexterity of young people and working their way around things. And so ultimately we have to it's part of the education system, about part of the role of parents is to, you know, work our way through these issues and give people the tools to deal with views and opinions that they don't like, and to be able to respond in a way.
But currently those tools are being disestablished.
Well, the BSA wasn't doing that. The BSA was looking at one, you know, they were getting 90 complaints a year on.
They were looking to expand, TV, though. That's what sort of prompted this decision, right?
Not necessarily. What prompted it was the fact that it was, you know, technology had overcome it. There was an option to massively expand their remit, but the what made that difficult was that there was no obvious stopping point. Do we really want them, regulating stuff that's on social media more broadly? No. Goes too far, and so you've got to draw a line somewhere. We just thought, well, actually, you know, the model works perfectly well for print journalism. Let's see how it works in the context of the broader approach, and so people will be held accountable by their peers, who best understand how media works, and then people obviously have the ultimate choice about these things.
Okay, let's see how it works then, eh?
Yes.
Thank you very much, Minister, for your time this morning. Hope you have an awesome rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Minister.
Takite.
That was What's Up with Minister Paul Goldsmith.